Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 69. And we are here tonight for a very, very special stream. And it's special, even though our special guest hasn't arrived, because we have Mike Enoch joining us later. He's running a couple of minutes late, but it's very special because we usually don't have the same guest on this close. We usually have, we've had people reappear many times, but not usually as close together as Mike is appearing. But that's because they've launched the National Justice Party over in America, and he's coming on tonight to speak specifically about the NJP, what they're hoping to do. So he'll be with us very shortly. Now, tonight, we are on DLive. We are live on DLive. That is our new home. We are no longer live on YouTube, and you know why. We are also live on RadioAlbion.com. That is the website of Sven Longshanks. It is the home of some amazing nationalist material. If you are ever starved of good material to listen to, RadioAlbion.com is jam-packed with absolutely amazing shows. You can go there any time of the day or night and fill your boots with amazing nationalist content. So please make sure you've got RadioAlbion.com bookmarked. Please support Sven and his excellent work. He's such an important member of our community. Now, tonight, if you are watching and don't catch all of the show, or if you've missed past shows, you can always catch up with me on BitChute, because that is where the full archive of not only every single episode of PWR can be found, but where the archive of every single one of my videos can be found. And that is because YouTube is purging all good nationalist content. So if you want to find my content in its original uncensored form, join me on BitChute. And I have just passed the 15,000 subscriber mark over on BitChute, something I'm quite proud about. So if you haven't subbed me there, please go and join the growing numbers of people that are. It is an anti-censorship platform. Please support both DLive and BitChute. Now, if you want to support me, if you want to contribute to the show, if you want to help me out with a financial contribution, the best way to do it through the course of this show is via Entropy. Now, I'm going to drop the Entropy link in the live chat now. It is also on my Twitter and it is on my Telegram. Entropy allows you to make financial contributions to the show and you can ask a question at the same time. Now, I'm sure there'll be lots of questions tonight, and please keep those questions as centered around what is going on in America as you can, because Mike is the guest, and ask as much as you want about the National Justice Party. You can also ask non-paid questions. All the paid questions or statements get read out live, and the non-paid questions, they are voted upon. The best voted questions go up in the chat. The, how should we say it, the least good questions, the lesser questions, sink down to the bottom and disappear and don't get asked. So if you've got something good to say, and if the audience appreciates it, it will be asked live on the show. Now, if you want to contribute to me in other ways, you can send me Bitcoin donations. My Bitcoin is available on my BitChute. Or you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com, where I can send you my bank details, or I can send you my Bitcoin address. So please, if you want to get in touch, that is the way to do it. I am also always there if people want to send me any ideas or comments, or if people need any help or advice. So you can reach me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Now, Mike is still on his way here. He's running a couple of minutes late. I think he's just finished recording TDS and he's getting set up for this show. But before Mike joins us, Jason, tell us what you've been up to this week, my friend, and tell us who is on tap.
Well, we don't have tap ironed out just yet, but we will. It'll be in either Thursday or Saturday, I think. And I'm going to be, I have some exciting, an exciting secret about where I might show up in the next week or so. So keep an eye out for that. It's a big secret, and it's on its way. I would like to highlight Watch Rider Studios, one of our colleagues who makes great Promethean, white positive content. Watch Rider Studios. Check him out. Great to be on again with Mike. I know he'll be here in a moment. Looking forward to that and the discussion of the NJP and our great leader, Mark Collett. And all that we have to talk about, there's quite a bit going on in the United States right now, not the least of which is right here in Washington, D.C. The mayor, Bowler, is trying to take down the Washington Monument and get rid of the Jefferson Memorial. So we'll see if that ends up happening or not. But a lot going on, brother, so I'll pass it back.
Well, thank you. And there is a lot going on in America. Obviously, as we get closer and closer to the November election, I'm sure we'll be having more guests on from the US. We already are eyeing up our 75th episode, and there will be a very special guest on the 75th episode. I will drop a small hint. He is the only guest that we've ever had on, and it has caused YouTube to put our stream into limited state as the stream was taking place. Now, some of you will guess straight away who that is. So that is obviously in five episodes. Next week, we have All Well and Good on. And the week after, we are going to be showcasing two or three smaller content creators in the UK and giving them a bit of a leg up, letting them introduce themselves to our sizable audience, because it's always good to help the little guy. And one thing that I'm really, really proud of with the growth of this movement here in the UK is the number of smaller content creators who produce absolutely sterling content. And it's important that we support those. And an example of this was last night. I did a live stream with a lovely lady called The White Butterfly. It was live on YouTube. She's got an excellent YouTube account. She has a wonderful BitChute account where she did an amazing trailer for the show. And I spent 2 hours last night discussing the movement, discussing really my life and also a little bit about her life and how she came to the movement. So if you want to check that out, the links to that show are still on my Telegram and they're on my Twitter. That was a really good show. The 2 hours seemed to fly by and it was a great way to spend a Tuesday evening. Now tonight, it is a rather rainy evening here in the UK. I feel like autumn has come too soon. It seems like summer died a good few weeks ago, but hopefully, despite the rain and the rather depressing weather, we're going to have some good news. And one thing I'm quite excited about with the National Justice Party is for a long time, the American scene has been very, very fragmented. And it seems to have been dominated by small groups that organize themselves more around either producing small-scale political stunts, some form of conferences. There was the MPI conferences. They didn't last too long, unfortunately, but there's the regular American Renaissance conferences. Or you tend to find groups that are based around music. Sort of the older skinhead music scene is still quite popular in America. But for a long time, there hasn't been a sensible, all-encompassing, community-based political group in the US. Now, when we started Patriotic Alternative here in the UK, I thought, hopefully, something similar will be formed in other English-speaking countries that were founded by those of European descent. So I was hoping for something similar in America, something similar in Canada, something similar in Australia too, and New Zealand. And to see the NJP being formed, I think, is a really, really positive thing. Because it's all well and good talking on the internet. It's all well and good having these amazing discussions that take place every week. And there's great content every night now on YouTube or on DLive or on other streaming services. But we need real world political action. And when I first became aware of Mike Enoch, I was blown away by his verbal abilities, by his verbal IQ. He was always in debates. He was always on, at the time, it was Andy Worski's channel. I'm actually on with Andy Worski Friday night, but I'll tell you a bit more about that at the end of the show. He was then heavily featured on JF Garapay's channel. And Mike was always debating with people. And no one ever managed to get the better of Mike. He was always far too sharp. And I always thought that if anyone was to start a political movement, if anyone was to go on any form of national television show to advertise our movement, Mike would be a prime candidate. He's the kind of guy who could run circles around any newscaster or any pundit. And his TRS network was already doing amazing programming, amazing work. And then they started the pool parties. And for that to finally turn into a political alternative, that is absolutely what I wanted to see. He is here now with us. I've given him his little intro as he was arriving to save time.
Yeah, so thanks.
You'll have heard I've already introduced you. Everyone's very excited to hear about the NJP. So give yourself a brief intro and tell us why you formed it, how, and a little bit about the party. That would be a great introduction.
Yeah, well, we'd been talking about ever since Charlottesville, there was always this debate. Can you hear me okay? Am I coming through? Okay.
Absolutely. Brilliant.
Okay, great. Perfect. Ever since Charlottesville, there's always this debate about political action in America because of how the setup there went, how people felt they were set up by the authorities, set up by the anarchists and the police working together with the media and everything. And, you know, when you go out, if you're going to go out in the streets and do protests, you're going to get ambushed by anarchists. You're going to end up going to jail for defending yourself, as some people did. And how do you do it? Third parties in America tend not to work because the electoral system is rigged. So how do you do it? What do you do to put a crack into it? And so we've been talking about this for years. And when the violence after the George Floyd thing just erupted, and we saw that whites were not getting the representation that they needed from Donald Trump and the Republican Party. And we were like, you know, we want there to at least be something for people to see and grab hold of, where somebody is unequivocally and openly taking their side and giving an example of what that looks like. And we want to do it in a way that looks good, in a way that is palatable to people. Like the speech that I gave when we did our party opening on the 15th, that reached circles outside of our movement. And many people, it wasn't just preaching to the choir again. That, you know, we actually had a lot of people that, you know, working class guys were showing their dads. People told me they actually felt comfortable showing this to family members, people that were into Trump, conservatives and things like that. And a lot of them were like, hey, yeah, you know, I actually don't disagree with anything this guy is saying. And so what we're trying to do with the National Justice Party is create kind of like a rallying point or a focal point around which the ideology and the narratives and the talking points and everything we've developed can coalesce, and which we can create some real world excitement, you know, doing it in a controlled manner, because that event that we had, of course, you know, it was very controlled. We had a couple hundred people there. It was very tightly controlled, the way, you know, very secure and everything. And so we want to make people feel safe to come out to our events, to hear speeches, to listen to speakers, to meet other people and feel like they can do that. And then we can also create propaganda that we can put out for the mainstream to listen to and that they can relate to, and they can see, you know, this isn't just some guy. This guy has people listening to him. So you create that element of social proof as well. So that was sort of the idea. That's the concept behind the National Justice Party. There's some confusion. I think people thought, like, I'm running for president. I'm not running for president. People are like, oh, it's just, you know, you're gonna make a list of members and the FBI is going to get it. We're not interested in that. The only way that right now, if you would like to be on our mailing list, you can put your email address into our website. And that's all the information we're interested in from you. You know, that we'll talk about how people, you know, we are going to have another event in November after the election. That's our next big event. I have a few other speeches scheduled at private events this month, but the next big event is going to be November. And if people want to get invited, you know, send an email, and I'm not going to talk about how we go through that process here, obviously, but basically this is how we're doing it. No, so none of these sort of previous mistakes, I think, are going to be made. Like, we've known white nationalist movements that have made, I'll be honest, they've made a lot of errors in the past in America. errors in terms of, I'll say the hated word, optics, errors in terms of political calculations. But we decided that, you know, the most important thing here is the message. And white people in America are more than ready for this message, as we saw with the absolute, the total upsurge of support for Kyle Rittenhouse, despite every official channel, including the Republican Party, with the exception of Donald Trump, because he was pressed on it and he knew he'd be throwing the election if he threw this kid under the bus. You know, with the exception of him, everybody's throwing this kid under the bus, yet that's not how the people feel. And that's the case in almost every issue. So I want to go out there and speak and give speeches and do events in front of people where I'm giving you everything you really want to hear. It's not hidden behind, oh, low black unemployment. It's not hidden behind Uncle Tom's at the RNC. It's not hidden behind some other proxy issue. It's, we are here for white Americans, because we know that whites in America and all over the world, but you know, we are in America, so we focus there, are under racial attack. And people feel that way, so it's time that they heard this message. That's the idea behind the National Justice Party, basically.
So you are confirming that it isn't going to be Duke Enoch 2020.
No, we're not. I'm not running for president. One, I don't think I could possibly make any logistical requirements. But actually, that's an interesting point, because the topic of electoral politics is an interesting one. In America, the electoral system is totally rigged for the two parties. I mean, I don't think they actually, a lot of people think they might rig it further than that for one of the other parties. I don't think so. I think they're perfectly happy to bounce ping pong ball between these two sides eternally, and they don't need to do any more, because then they'll throw suspicion, more suspicion than there already is, on the whole thing. But third parties are essentially locked out, and doing that, at least right now, with the level of support that we have, I mean, I'm not lying to myself or anyone else about what our real hardcore support is like. It's impressive, but it, you know, it wouldn't be enough to win an election. And the reason is for that is mainly because of censorship and shutdowns and, you know, all other kinds of oppression, physical attacks on us. The law enforcement won't enforce the law when we get attacked, things like this. So we need to get the message to more and more people. And if we spend a lot of time filling out ballot access requirements, getting signatures on particular, like that takes a lot of work and a lot of money and a lot of effort. And in the end, you're just going to lose. Like if you come out of the box third party, try to do a presidential run, the amount of bureaucratic crap you're going to waste your time on, that you're not spending that time spreading the message, it's a waste of time, in my opinion. So we're going to not even worry about elections. We're not even going to worry about running candidates. We are going to bring our message to the people. That is what this is about. Bringing our message of unequivocal, unabashed, pro-white politics to the American people and let them decide, frankly.
So do you have any questions, Jason, before we throw some other ones over to Mike from the chat?
Sure. The first thing I would like to ask is, and welcome, Mike, great to see you back again, is the FEC registration. You won't be registering.
Well, I'm not going to, I don't want to, I mean, party. I'd rather not discuss business details. We are not registered with the FEC right now. I'd rather not discuss that kind of stuff at all. I mean, people have tried to use this as an own, but if I'm not running for president, why would I register with the FEC? Like, what would be the point of that?
Well, it's also, it's actually a positive if you're not registered, because when you're registered,
right, which is another, have to give their names, another reason we chose not to go this route of forming what's called in the United States a 727 organization. I don't want to talk about what we are actually doing organizationally, because it's just not, it doesn't matter. Suffice it to say, if people want to get in touch with us, send us your email address. We'll get back in touch with you. And
another question that I've seen a lot of is the people asking about whether or not the party or the group will be endorsing either of the candidates. All right. Mark,
yeah,
you want to
I'm
going to
read some of the super chats in a minute, but obviously we are coming up to what is going to be probably the most divisive election in American history. the most heated election. And I think I've made this point before to you. I think Trump is both the candidate that we are closest to in terms of ideology. And I think that he is also the accelerationist candidate. I think there's a lot of eggs in the Trump basket. And I feel personally that going into this election, the American voters are going to be given two choices. They're going to be given Joe Biden, who is essentially insane. Every time he opens his mouth, every time he's amongst the public, he's almost like the Grandpa Simpson of politicians. He bumbles through everything he says. He fails to make cohesive points. And he is endorsing, essentially, Antifa, the Black Lives Matter rioters. He is more or less saying that he is on their side. On the other hand, you've got Donald Trump, and he's going to play the law and order card. And I believe that the vast majority of people who would be on board or have ideas and views that coincide with ours and would potentially be people who'd be interested in the National Justice Party will in some way be endorsing Trump at this election. Will you be making any moves to capitalize on that situation and to reach out to people who will be desperate for Trump to do something and to get back in November, because they are literally fearing for their livelihoods, their lives, for the lives of their children?
Well, I think that the moves that we're making is exactly that. Like I said, when we did our event on August 15th, that speech went it got very wide exposure around the internet. We have many people that were not ever part of this movement that were some of these Trump people. Obviously, that is exactly the people we want to reach, the people who will be voting for Donald Trump. And right now, you probably wouldn't necessarily want to pick a fight with them about all of my criticisms of Donald Trump. And I have a lot. And the TRS network is very critical. If you want to hear just Donald Trump praise, definitely you're not going to want to be, it's going to annoy you listening to us. But I think people also need to, you don't have to coddle them. Like I don't have to just coddle to someone's already existing preferences, because then we're not making any headway. We want to make headway. We want to get people to understand that pro-white politics are perfectly rational, normal, moral. I mean, would you be particularly enthusiastic about endorsing Boris Johnson with Patriotic Alternative? I kind of doubt it, right? And so, our relationship with Trump is probably similar to your relationship with Boris, although he's actually, Trump has some elements to him that Boris Johnson doesn't have, but they're kind of similar. If they cut kind of a similar figure, if you see, they're both kind of these brash sleazeball type characters that are just in your face, and at least that's and they make all these claims that they're gonna cut immigration and stuff, and it hasn't happened. So I think with a lot of people, the hope for Trump and the reality are just in stark contrast, and that has to be pointed out, because we can't just live on hope alone. And I do expect that Trump will do much better in this election than I would have thought he was going to do a few months ago, particularly after this, the total escalation of violence from anarchists and the groundswell of support that the young man, Kyle Rittenhouse, got justifiably. I mean, totally justifiably, but you can see why the conservative movement isn't the right vehicle for whites in America when you see the response to him. I mean, they either have people like Chris Wallace and Bill Kristol who share certain traits, condemning him, or they're just silent. One of the things we did, and we actually got a lot of praise for this, is that day, the next day, I wrote a statement on our website in full-throated, absolute and total support of Rittenhouse. And we kind of got that first crack out of the box before really anybody else had. And I'm not saying we like set the tone or that everybody saw that, but that's an example. What I want to do is, that statement was an unequivocal, no proxies, no hidden issues, no hiding behind politically correct rhetoric, an unequivocal, unabashed, total statement of support for this young man, moral, legal, philosophical support. And that is what people want. And I want to show people what that looks like. So even though they might still strategically vote for the GOP, they're always going to have in their mind, what does a real issue, what does it really look like when someone just openly supports our cause? What does that really look like? And they're going to get sick of the corners that the GOP cuts, the routes that they take to not, they don't even mention white people. I mean, when's the last time that white people, I mean, I know last time I was on this show was, I think, the last time Donald Trump mentioned white people. And that was a big event, but he wouldn't have done that without the kind of upward pressure that we are trying to exert on the political class and on the voters to, you know, understand these issues. I mean, there were people that came to us, like a friend of mine that was an attendance at the speech. He was like, you know what? I'm just going to go no holds barred. I'm just going to show the speech to my coworkers. I'm just going to show it to the guys in my union. And he said a couple of them raised some eyebrows at it, but a couple of them enthusiastically agreed. And these were guys that weren't talking politics or weren't involved with our movement at all before. And they liked what they saw. So when you do that, how then are you going to settle for Mitch McConnell or Lindsey Graham or any of these characters on Fox News or any of these people? You're not going to want to settle for it when I'm giving you a steak, a juicy, thick steak. You don't want to settle for a TV dinner. And that's what the Republican Party is always going to give you. So, yeah, that's sort of the idea we're doing with this.
I completely agree. And I one thing, I've been critical of Trump, and at times I've been very, very annoyed with his behavior, his policy making, the fact that Kushner's got a leash on him, the fact that he's so Zionist friendly. I'm not Trump's hugest fan at all, but he is a world away from Boris Johnson. However bad you think you've got it with Trump, I can assure you Boris Johnson is a lot worse, to the point where Johnson will criticize Trump for being too far right. And I one thing I'll say about Trump, and I've said this before, I'll say it again, President Trump is not as good as campaigning Trump. And I think that in the run-up to this election, the big questions are going to be law and order, race, and policing, and the safety of people and their right to defend themselves. Yep. They're going to be the big issues. And they are issues which, ultimately, I think the average white American, i.e. your sort of middle-class white American, the guy that goes to work, comes home to his wife and kids, and he wants a nice weekend at the ball game, and he doesn't want to be stuck in traffic for 4 hours because there's 20 Antifa and 100 Black Lives Matter people in the road. He doesn't want to see the guys at the ball game taking a knee through the national anthem. He doesn't want to be told he's going to lose his guns. He doesn't want his kids to be taught LGBT rubbish in schools. The normal person on the street is waiting for a solution. And unfortunately for us, Trump is far better at selling solutions than he is at actually delivering on the solutions that he's sold. But I think as we get closer and closer to the election, I wouldn't be surprised if Trump started not just dog whistling, but much more openly talking about the rights of white people. And I also wouldn't be surprised if he didn't out and out label Antifa and parts of the Black Lives Matter movement as domestic terrorists in an effort to signal to people that he's going to clamp down on them. Now, do I think he'd actually clamp down on them post-election? No, I don't. I think he would do exactly what he's done this time, which is fail to build the wall, fail to really do anything meaningful when it comes to immigration. And I think he would be back to kissing up to Zionist interests in an effort to be, in an effort to save his own neck and keep his head above water. So do I think he'd be a successful president a second time around? Probably not. But I think campaigning Trump will be a lot of fun. And I think second term President Trump might also be fun in the fact that I don't think we would see the kind of leftist meltdowns that we saw last time. I don't think it would be some fat blob of indeterminate sex crouched in the street, wetting themselves as they shriek impotently into the sky.
Oh, I think we'll get that. If he wins,
I don't.
These people will go insane. But yeah.
Oh yeah, but I don't think this time it would be punching the air and screaming and throwing a paddy and wetting yourself.
Yeah, no, it'll be burning down a city.
Everything down. It wouldn't be that guy who was screaming at the sky when people were laughing. Yeah. It would be, you know, your local Walmart has just been invaded and essentially everything is gone. Your 7-Eleven is burnt to the ground.
They might just start shooting white people. Like they might just start shooting white people. Like they're already almost on the brink of doing that. And this is something that they have in their own mind through their own twisted logic and politics, a justification for. I mean, the murder of Aaron Danielson was cold-blooded murder. I mean, if anyone saw the video, there was no provocation for that. This was a man that walked up to another man and shot him. Didn't think twice. He just shot him. Oh, you're a patriot. You're dead.
And I think that will increase. I think the polarization of society, that's where it's going.
There's a certain segment of the elite, I guess you could effectively call them liberals, the people roughly aligned with the left side of the kosher sandwich, the Democrat Party. They are beside themselves because they don't know what to do because they are between a rock and a hard place. They can't condemn these people, but also these people are alienating them from average Americans. I mean, one of the things that really pisses off people on the left side of the spectrum politically in America, not necessarily, you know, whatever race or religion they might be, that when it comes down to the election time, the closer and closer it gets to election, the more both candidates start to appeal to what they call like Joe's six-pack average America. And Joe Biden had to do it too. Now, he can't do it convincingly, but he has to pretend. And that really pisses off these Black Lives Matter people because they're like, why are you trying to get like the median white voter? That's exactly the America we're trying to destroy. And here you are appealing to them again. So it creates all these funny problems. But in terms of Trump, I agree that he's going to go into, I mean, he's already doing it. And so the question sort of was like, does Trump want to win the election? There's been speculation on that. I've always been on the team of, yes, he does. He wants to win the election. I think it just doesn't make sense otherwise. Like to posit otherwise, there would be some other big scam where, you know, the Republicans were sort of throwing it on purpose. And I suppose there's a possibility of something like that. But I think he wants to win the election. And I think there's many Republicans. There definitely are many Republicans that don't want him to. I mean, there's some that openly now are just doing like the Republicans for Biden, which that's like, okay, now like everybody hates you. There's nobody that likes you when you do that. But he wants to win. And in order to win, he's going to have to go back to the strategy that he used in 2016. And that strategy worked, and it will work again. It will work again, given how out of control the left has gotten. And in fact, he can even capitalize on his own failures. His own failure to restore order to the street is benefiting him now. And he is totally capable of blaming this on city and state governments because they do say, hey, Trump, you know, get out of here, like F off, buddy. Like, we don't want your federal troops. And he's like, nothing I can do. You know, like they failed to take my help. And it's like, yeah, I mean, everything looks right. I mean, it almost is like maddening how perfect everything is set up for him right now. And he didn't do anything to deserve this, but he has this circumstance anyway. And so, yeah, but I think our job is to explain this to people, kind of help people through this, not just to because if we just become like Republicans, then there's no point of existing, right? We have to be something different. And the point is, I don't expect that we're going to be winning a presidential election or anything like that anytime soon. We need to build a movement. We need to build a mass movement. We need to build support. We need to build confidence in people that our ideas are moral, that our ideas are respectable, that there's nothing wrong with them. I mean, this is one of the stumbling blocks. People have been brainwashed for so long to think that supporting whites is just immoral. There's just something wrong with it. Well, That doesn't make sense logically, reasonably. There's no reason why that should be the case. The only reason is because of elite pressure and career prospects and wanting to fit in with the right crowd and not wanting to get beaten up in the street and things like that. But we're going to push back on that and make people answer that question. Why is it that you don't want to be part of a pro-white movement? Why is it that you're going to run away from anything that mentions the white race as an interested group? Why? Because you don't run away from it in any other circumstance. There's nothing different. I mean, there's nothing. What, white people are categorically different, like just categorically immoral? In which case, the people telling that story are the bad people. They're the ones that need to be called out. And there are people telling that story, and they're in both parties. And so this is the point. We have to differentiate ourselves, despite understanding that the deck is stacked very well for Donald Trump right now. We still have to differentiate ourselves. We can't just bandwagon off of him. That would be, I think, a bad strategy.
I think that it's going to be very interesting what happens. And I think that obviously you do have a pool of people, the Trump supporters, you can recruit from. And I suggest that anybody in the mainstream that we can in some way, you're never going to control Trump. You're never going to get Trump on our side. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that he has to a degree done us a lot of favors. And I believe his talk about immigration and demographics in 2016 did us a lot of favors. I believe the polarization of society that he has caused and deepened has done us a lot of favors. And I also think the fact that this election, he is going to be faced with two choices. He either pushes back against Antifa, BLM, the liberal agenda, or he loses. And the weird thing about Trump, which is probably a little bit different to most other presidential candidates, is he is motivated not just by power, but he's motivated to a greater degree than I think most politicians are by ego. And I think he would do whatever he needed to do to win. And if he thought saying it's time for white America to have a voice, I think if he was actually at the point where he was convinced that would win him the election, he would just do it. And I don't think he would care about the consequences. Because to Trump, if he sort of self-immolated politically by doing something like that, but it caused him to win the election, I don't think he'd care how much damage he did to himself as long as he could call himself the winner at the end. And that's the difference between him and other politicians, because he has a lot of positive traits. He won't apologize when he knows he's in the right. He won't back down if he's got facts to back up his argument. But his ego can be used to our benefit. We do have a lot of questions, Mike, and I know that a lot of people want us to get into some of these questions. So we did have people actually asking about the NJP a few days ago. We've got Anglo Scott. He simply said, "Amen, come on, tell it." He also said that gorilla had a sense of who she was. Tell it, Dr. Boyce. And Johannes D said, "Awesome NJP, Mike, you really told it." So you've got some fans there, it seems. Stanley Sloggett gave £10. Thank you very much. And he said, "Love the White Cliffs of Dover vid. Keep up the good work." Well, thank you very much, Stanley. That doesn't address anything for Mike, but I do appreciate that super chat, and that will go towards our excellent piece of activity. And if you haven't shared the White Cliffs of Dover material yet, make sure you do. Junta Mominari gave $10. Thank you very much. He said, "Patriots Prayer founder is Joey Gibson, half Jap, half German, and second in command is Tiny Polynesian. It is a multiracial Christian prayer group, but Antifa calls them white supremacists and proto-fascists. Ditto for Proud Boys. Is Antifa correct in this assessment?" Is Antifa correct in that assessment? I'm not really sure what that's about, but it sounds like it's something for the Americans.
Okay, well, I can speak to this. So, no, I would say they are not correct in calling them white supremacists. They are correct in understanding that they are opposed to them, that they are a force that is, that, because here's the thing I'll say. He is correct. These groups operate on kind of a libertarian, conservative, don't tread on me kind of ideology combined with some Christianity, although I think I'm not sure how serious most of them are about that. If the Patriot prayer thing is kind of a thing they do, it doesn't really matter. I'm not going to speculate about other people's religion. They seem to be serious in what they're saying. So what they seem to be is some kind of libertarian Christian American patriots, a fairly standard template of what people have been in America. And yes, they do have people of many races, and a lot of the white people in those groups have girlfriends or wives of different race. However, I still support them over Antifa, obviously. And obviously, there is no excuse for murdering these people. And in a conflict between them and Antifa, you better believe which side I'm going to root for and which side I'm going to gravitate towards and which side has men in it that we can speak to and bring into our thing. In fact, that has happened in the past. We do have people in those movements that are supporters of our ideology. But again, some of them also feel, well, I joined this group, and I am now also a white nationalist, but I'm not going to abandon a group that I joined because I'm part of this group, and I owe them some kind of allegiance as well. And so I can't just be like, oh, change my mind on politics, see you later. Like, because that kind of undermines the whole idea of loyalty. And so I actually respect that if people are like, I'm a white nationalist, but I'm also still in a Proud Boy, or I'm still in Patriot prayer. There are people that are doing that. Now, I don't even know if those are official organizations or they're unofficial clubs or whatever, but they seem to have a lot of balls, and they do go head to head with the Antifa quite a lot. And in some ways, I think the fact that they embrace certain elements of the official American ideology, like multiracialism and things like that, gives them the feeling like they won't be attacked or they won't be called these things. But of course, they still are. What I would really liken them to is in the Weimar period of Germany, I would liken them to the Freikorps. Like, they're sort of like the Free Corps. They're not fascists. They're not national socialists. They're not white nationalists, which is what they would call actual sort of fascists in the world of today. They're like the Free Corps. They didn't like communists. They certainly didn't want communist revolution in Germany. They were patriotic, but they didn't really have much of an ideology. And so that's what I would like in these groups. I would say these are Free Corps. They're not really fascists. So Antifa gets it wrong, but they're not wrong that these are definitely their enemies. They're, you know, a lot of them, you can't really even hold it against them. I mean, they are working class patriotic people. That's what they are. And what they see from Antifa disgusts them, and they want to go fight them. And I don't blame them.
I do think that historical analogy is very, very good, because as these people begin to loot and burn their way across America, law-abiding white people are really going to have two choices, aren't they? Well, three choices. The first choice is that they join the looters and that they loot and burn themselves. Probably pretty unlikely if you're a homeowner and you've got children and you're married and you're a productive member of society. The second choice is just to stand by and let everything be destroyed and you and your family be sort of eaten up in the flames. Or the third choice is you get on board with people like us or with some kind of resistance. And that definitely plays into your analogy, because people joined the Freikorps really just to stop Germany being completely overrun by people who were going to tear it down and subjugated to some communist horror. And I think we're in very, very similar times. And the other part of that analogy that would fit is, at the time, Weimar Germany was the peak of degenerate.
Oh, yeah, you better believe it.
It was vile. And America is very much that today. And people often ask, you know, why do we have, you know, lots of American guests on the show? Well, everything that happens in Britain is kind of downstream from America. In fact, everything that happens in the Western world is downstream from America. America sets the cultural norm, which sooner or later reaches every Western nation, perverting it, destroying it, and dragging us into the same mire that you're already neck deep in. And I think it's very important that whatever happens, if America was to fall, or completely go under, that could have many, many different effects on the rest of the Western world. And I think when we're watching what's going on there, we know the effect it's coming to us sooner rather than later. I mean, we're already seeing a lot of the trouble and strife and the early Black Lives Matter activity here in Britain. It might not be as violent yet. It might not be as contagious. It might not be spreading as far. But we can begin to see what's going to be our future based on what you're already suffering from there. Yeah. Now, we've got a super chat here from Serena JB. She gave £3 last week and asked about the National Justice Party. So she definitely got a value for money, because we answered her super chat with an entire show just with you. Okay. But she super chatted tonight, £5. Thank you very much. And she says, congratulations on the NJP and a fantastic opening speech. How fast is your party growing, and how much resistance has it received from the usual suspects?
Well, we've gotten, I'll say we have a lot of interest in the next event we are going to do. We have many, many, you know, I don't know if I want to give out exact numbers on this. We've received, let's say, emails in the thousands of people requesting, wanting to know more. You know, remember, like Starship Troopers. Would you like to know more? So people want to know more. And I understand, like, we have to be, again, one of the issues that we learned about from previous experiences with movements in the past and even more recent ones that failed is certain ways of doing security and OPSEC and protecting people and making sure that things don't, there's no problems along that front, because we know that we will get, that eventually we will get resistance. There has not been resistance, much resistance at this point. There has been, Antifa has been, had went through a hissy fit about it. Of course, there was an article in the SPLC. Of course, there's an article in Newsweek about it, but that's just the same as the SPLC, because there's a connect, there's a direct connection there, personnel wise, between the people that work for those organizations. So there's been that. There's been some people doing things like setting up fake accounts purporting to be us. I just want to say in regards to that, do not donate to anything, a Cash App or anything like that, that is saying that it's us. Anything will be on our website, on nationaljusticeparty.com, whether it's our Telegram channel, our Twitter channel, our BitChute channel. Those are our channels. And we will have announcements on our website and on those channels, nothing else. If we add a new channel, it will be listed there. We are not, there is someone, I heard someone's going around pretending to be us asking for Cash Apps. That's not us. Don't give them any money. Just check. If you see something and you're not sure, check the website, go to the contact page and see, is this thing that I saw listed there? If it's not, it's a faker. And there's been a lot of stuff like that, and that's to be expected. We, in fact, at one point had our email address listed on the site, and a friend called me who has some experience with this. He's like, are you kidding me? He's like, they're going to change the I's to L's and they're going to confuse people and all. And I was like, oh gosh. So we took it down, and now you have to submit a form to get in touch with us. So yes, there has been resistance in terms of sort of gay-oping and this, these kind of things to try and mess people up or rip people off or whatever. So I would say, again, there's no Cash App. If we do have a Cash App, we want you to donate. It will be on the website. We're not soliciting donations just yet, but there's a PO box there. There's a Twitter, there's a Telegram, and there's a BitChute. Those are our official channels and the website itself. And then anything I say as representing the party, or anything that Stryker might say, if he says I'm representing the party in this, or any of the other seven members that were announced at the initial conference. So that's how we're doing it. Right now, you know, members, we're not collecting members. We want supporters. We're collecting supporters. We want people that want to come to our events, that want to see me speak, want to see some of the others speak, want to enjoy an evening of camaraderie with people that think like themselves and make some new friends and things like that. So it's kind of similar to the way you're doing, I think, Patriotic Alternative, where you're more focused on building that way than, and eventually, I think eventually we're going to take more action with this group. And by action, I mean political action. Like, that's the idea, right? We want to build a base of support for further political action. But our view is we need to build that support first. And we need to show people that we're serious, that we can do it. We need to prove again and again through doing things that are successful. Like, our initial launch meeting was a successful event. We need to do that like 10 more times. And all the naysayers will fall by the wayside, and people be like, whoa, so these guys said they were going to do these things. They said they were going to be successful, and everything they've set out to do they've done, setting realistic goals, meeting those goals. Like my philosophy going into this, so people understand this, was I know the mistakes of the past. I don't want to repeat them. And if we're going to do something, what are the elements of this? What elements can we control? What elements can't we control? If the things we can't control are too much, we don't do it. We eliminate to the greatest extent possible elements of these kinds of things that we can't control. So, for example, we're not going to ask you to put on NJP armbands and march into the middle of a public park yet. No, I'm joking. But yes, like, because we feel like that would be an out of control situation. We would generate a situation where people would be physically assaulted by anarchists and police wouldn't back us up and we'd end up in court and it would be a whole mess. And I don't want, that doesn't help anybody. So we want to create situations, events that people can enjoy, have a good time, listen to some speeches, create good propaganda, and have this be as every element under our control to make sure that anarchists and enemies don't penetrate our security and try and destroy our people or physically attack us. That's our goal. That's how we're running this.
And if you don't mind me saying, if you ever do move into elections, or if you ever do try to get ahead on the electoral scene, my advice is don't rush in. I've seen many parties, especially here in the UK, and they go for this gigantic, massive assault mm-hmm. on the system. And what I mean by that is they'll go out for a general election. They'll say, look, there's 650 seats. We're going to stand 600 of those seats. And it's £500 a deposit.
Right.
And each leaflet costs around £1,000 to get the leaflet ready for the constituency. And by the time they've finished at £1,500 a seat and 600 seats, they're massively, massively out of pocket. And they average about 3.2% across the country. They're completely out of money. Everyone is completely demoralized and the party never recovers again.
This,
if you go into elections, target a place you're going to do well, hit it with everything you've got and make incremental gains rather than going on a full frontal assault, which would be absolute suicide.
Yeah, this is kind of exactly what I was talking about. I don't want to fight on a rigged battlefield, and the electoral battlefield is rigged. And in order to overcome that, you need more, metaphorically speaking, obviously, maybe I shouldn't even use that metaphor. You need more power than we have right now to overcome that. And let's just be realistic. We are, we know where we are. We have a large group. We have thousands, tens, possibly hundreds of thousands of active supporters around America. And I know, we have tens of thousands of active supporters, probably hundreds of passive supporters. But again, we also understand that there's risks to being sort of quote unquote seen as one of us, and because it's a politically repressed group, you face employment challenges, social challenges, if you're quote unquote outed. These are all the things we want to push against. We want to push against this stuff. This has to be like, again, we have to be able to just participate publicly before we can suddenly like win an election. And like in America, the ballot access rules are equally arcane. And if you want to run for president, you want to run one guy for president, you got to get on all 50 states. And then you have to meet all those requirements. You need a person in every state that's going to sponsor that, whatever the fees are. I don't even know the fee schedule, how many signatures, whatever you might need to do. I don't even know. And it's just not worth it because, as you said, inevitably that action ends in defeat. And so you've spent a lot of energy, a lot of money, and you've gotten nowhere. And in fact, you spent money and energy to lose. Like, I'm not going to do that. Like, I'm not going to spend money and energy to lose. If we're going to spend money and energy, it's going to be a win. Even if the win is, hey, we pulled off a successful meeting with 500 people. I gave a speech. We got a great propaganda video. Everyone had a great time. Everybody was really moralized. And that is a win. We have to understand that kind of thing is a win. We went out and we had a meeting, pro-white meeting, where we had hundreds of people in attendance, and we had a successful event, and it wasn't disturbed. It wasn't shut down. And now here's this great video that you can show your family and show your cousins and your coworkers, your union brothers, show all these people. Hey, look at these guys. That's what we want to create. And we want to create these things again and again and again and again, and build support. So we had about 200 people at the last one. Our goal is to get about 300 people at the next one, and we'll see if we can maybe get 500 the people at the one after that. That's every time we do that, that's a win. Every time we have a successful action like that, a successful meeting, it's a win. And every time anarchists fail to find us, fail to shut us down, fail to attack us and humiliate us, it's a win. And they know it, which is why they're mad. I mean, in fact, anarchists themselves wrote an article. This anarchist, Shane Burley, said, NJP doesn't need to participate in elections to be effective. In fact, they're probably more dangerous if they don't. He said it himself, and his line of reasoning was exactly the same as mine.
Very, 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 very wise words there. I can tell that you're going to be, I can tell that things are going to be good for you because you understand what it takes to win, and you understand that the people telling you to charge straight into the enemy machine guns, they're not the ones who are actually on your side. And if they are on your side, they're insane.
They're just naive, some of them, or stupid or whatever. Yeah. Or you know, or people don't know. Because again, I'll say this, in America, a lot of people think politics is running for office, elections. It's not. There's a much more meta element to it. Like the whole narrative structure that our political system is based on, which both parties adhere to right now, is anti-white. We need a voice, a loud public voice that is pro-white to counter that and to show whites that this is something that can exist. This is something that can exist. There are people willing to stand up and say this and give you these perspectives, because they have to be put out there, and they have to be put out there in a way that people can see. So it's not just, again, it's much more powerful. I didn't say much in that speech. I haven't said hundreds of times before. Why was it powerful? It was powerful because there's 200 people there screaming and stomping on the floor and cheering and hooting and hollering. That made it powerful. And so we need to do that again.
Junta Momonari gave $10 and said Black Lives Matter in Japan was organized by students at Temple University, American University satellite campus. It is the opportunity to join Black Lives Matter and Antifa. Japan's version is called CRAC, and yell at Japanese people for being racist while you are white. You can practice anti-racism where whites aren't the target. So he, Junta Momonari, is always very generous, and he gives us great examples each week of how it isn't just white Europeans that are facing this. There's many people in Japan who are now under siege with the same Marxist and sort of anti, we could call it anti-culture, couldn't we? Because we know Japan has a wonderful culture. They have a wonderful civilization, and that is under attack as well. And it's quite interesting because we do get some pea brains who try to spam the show with nonsense every week. And they say things such as, oh, why do you even care? This should all just be about what's going on in Britain. And it's like, well, it isn't all about what's going on in Britain, because anywhere you go in the world where there are people of European descent, those people are under exactly the same form of attack. And it's very important to point that out, because it shows that it's not a conspiracy theory, but there is an actual conspiracy against white people. And this guy tends to put forward the case that it's not just a conspiracy against whites, but it's a conspiracy against people who have a noble civilization, and that all noble civilizations of the world are going to be pulled down in this madness until essentially the world is, for want of a better term, Africanized. But we'll move on. The thin red line, unless you want
to
comment.
To speak to that, I mean, look, what are the targets that aren't, what are the targets that aren't white? Well, you mentioned Japan. What's another one? Iran. There's a noble civilization. You know, you're right. You're exactly right. Like civilizations that are self-confident and orderly seem to trigger this global Zionist machine. And of course, they have their reasons with Japan. There's other reasons involved. Of course, they were being allied with Germany in the Second World War has led to resentment. And the fact that also increasingly, you know, a lot of people in the Western world and in America, I don't know, maybe in the UK as well, look at Japan and like, well, you know, they seem to have a really nice country just for themselves. What's wrong with that? And they're like, oh, not for long. So, yes, it's going to take, and again, they'll meet. See, the Zionist entryists will meet countries sort of where they are. So when you look at like Poland, for example, Poland, very nationalistic, patriotic. But they have their feelers in there as well, and they are trying to get, like, for example, you can't do a gay pride march in Poland without patriots coming out, Polish patriots coming out and beating the crap out of you for now. But last time this happened, what do? They created, it was just a few weeks ago, huge, massive international outcry. The United States started like pressuring the Polish government. So then the Polish government's going to be like, well, we have to actually really protect this gay rights stuff. So then, you know, this is how it works. And this shows that the United States, being the center of degeneracy and the center of empire, then is used by the Zionist forces to continue to promote this everywhere. And sure, it's not socially acceptable the way it is in the UK or in America to have all this gay stuff, but they sure better believe they're going to have it like that in 20 years. That's the goal. So they'll meet them where they are and always push, always push. They're not going to immediately try and dive right in with, you know, oh, we're actually turning children into, we're like mutilating them with surgeries and actually saying they can consent for sex, homosexual sex at age 14. Like, there's a law in California they're contemplating right now that would go for that. So you can't do that, but, you know, give it 20 years. That's their attitude. So nowhere is immune. That's why we have to actually work.
No, somebody in the chat's correctly said the same's going on in South Korea as well. I mean, again, another place which has a noble culture, and they're under the same kind of attack. I mean, if you look at the state of young Korean men, the effeminate, the level of sort of effeminate behavior is off the charts. The only places where there are sort of strong men in any form of culture, you'd have to say, would be China and North Korea, which is very, very interesting. I don't know what you can infer from that, but we'll move on swiftly. The Thin Red Line gave $3 US. And this is another question for Mike. Will the National Justice Party stand for election? Maybe local elections could be a start. I think we've answered that, but if there's anything you want to add.
Well, I would say with local elections, we actually discussed this, like, what if there's a seat someplace that we could grab, pick up or something like that? And the decision really is that if you were to grab a local seat somewhere, I liked what you said before, though, about, like, when you're ready, like, push in one place, but you'd want to push in actual points of power. So you want to get people. So if there's, like, some local, you know, alderman or something like that, what are you going to be able to do with that? Because if you do anything that goes against, you know, what the federal government wants, they'll claim federal jurisdiction, civil rights, blah, blah. They'll just shut you down, possibly put you in jail or remove you. A good friend of mine, also, on TRS radio network, James Alsup, he had got some Republican Party seat a couple years ago through getting it because it was uncontested and he was in the area. He filled out the forms. And then the party just changed their rules to kick him out. Because once they found out who he was, they just changed the rules to kick him out. And of course, you know, no Republican voters asked for them to do that. It was actually liberals that found out and raised their attention to this. And they were like, here's a guy in your party that we hate. Your voters don't have any problem with him, but we don't like him. So you better get rid of him. So it's just right now, I don't feel like those are the fights that are worth fighting. We'll keep looking at that, I guess. And see, maybe there is something somewhere along the line that might be worth fighting. But even if you were to secure some local seat, what do you do with that? I mean, because the point of our group is we want to drive a message. We want to send a message. We want to build support for our message and our ideas first. And that's the stage that we're in now. So sort of diverting that into holding, like, possibly minor seats in a township or a county somewhere might be a big distraction. But, you know, it's possible. I don't think we're going to be looking at that in the next year for sure.
Well, thank you. I think we talked a lot about elections, and that was a very comprehensive answer. Sam Sheridan gave $20 US and said, come on, Mike, don't be late. We need to make ranch jokes and tell you about how we've all seen Kyle. Also for Mark, what is PA's stance on the Barnett formula? Do you believe that Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland should get disproportionately more money than England? Would be curious to hear Mike's take on it as well. Well, I'll answer this one very rapidly. The Barnett formula, for those who don't know, is a system of wealth redistribution across the United Kingdom, whereby England, which is far richer than the rest of the United Kingdom, goes out and basically gives huge amounts of money to Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales. And this is why, especially in Scotland, people in Scotland get free tuition fees. They don't have to take student loans to pay for their tuition fees. People in Scotland get free hospital parking. They get free prescriptions. There are a lot of benefits to basically being Scottish, because England pays huge, huge sums of money to keep Scotland afloat. And it's very interesting the effect that the Barnett formula has had on Scotland, because the Scottish government, the SNP, who basically are in control up there but want strangely independence, have claimed that they've done all these miraculous things for Scotland. But they've done it all with English money that's given to them via the Barnett formula. And it's really quite curious, because the SNP want to break away from Britain. They want to be an independent Scotland. But that would then ironically lead to them not getting any Barnett formula money, which means they couldn't pay for all the wonderful things they're currently paying for the Scottish electorate. It's all a bit of a mess. I think that the Barnett formula has always been used to keep a steady quality of life across the whole of the United Kingdom, so you don't have certain areas living sort of in abject poverty or squalor. But at the moment, that money is being used essentially by the regional parliaments to actually break up the United Kingdom. So it's quite an interesting situation. And I think I'm going to draw a line under that there. Although I will say this, I think it is extremely unfair for England and for English voters and those living in England, when they have to pay for things like prescription charges, when they have to pay for their tuition fees, when they have to pay for hospital parking, yet they are funding free services like that in other countries. I think that is extremely unfair and should definitely be addressed, because that is a huge inequality that needs dealing with. Unknown California gave $15 and said, Mike is my favorite thought leader. I love TDS and Strike and Mike. Thank you for hours of information and knowledge. My TRS subscription expired and I need to renew it ASAP. Thanks for being the juggernaut you are. Unrivaled and unstoppable. So big fan there, Unknown California, and thank you for the donation, my friend. The Thin Red Line gave $5 and said, thank you very much, and said, do you think there will be some sort of attempted coup by the DNC and the deep state if Trump wins?
I don't. I think it'll be I think there'll be escalations of left-wing violence, as we talked about earlier. And there'll be more flailing about. I think we'll see more of the same, basically, from the media. Like more, just Trump derangement syndrome. I don't see. The thing is, Trump also has his base of support among elites. He's not a total outsider. He posed as such, but he's not. He has very powerful friends. Very powerful friends in the place that matters the most. So I don't think that they. I think that there is a lot of actual friction between the faction of Zionists that back Donald Trump and the sort of, I don't, for lack of a better term for this, the sort of more sober or pragmatic kind of liberal Zionist elements. Like the elements that back Donald Trump are very nationalistic. They're very aggressive. They don't care about optics. For example, these are the type of people that say we should deport all the Palestinians now. We should annex the West Bank and the Gaza Strip now. Why should we, you know, these are unpopular things and completely at odds with U.S. policy for years, where the sort of pragmatic side, which tends to be more aligned with the Democratic Party, or actually it tends to be aligned with both parties, but it's not aligned with Donald Trump, tends to say more like, well, we can't do those kind of abrasive moves because it will be too much of a shock to the system and it will engender too much resistance, etc. So there is a push and pull between these elements in the Zionist milieu itself, but it's not like the people that back Trump are without resources and power, and they have seemed to have been able to protect him and keep him there. I mean, the Mueller probe seemed like the best shot that they had. I also don't think the American people would tolerate that if they elect him again. that would be another thing. Like, if the people elect this man again and they start trying to do that, then it's like, okay, so there really is the you elites really are just at war with us. I mean, we know that they are. But for them, it's also like, if Donald Trump is sort of strategically giving them the kinds of concessions they want while also whipping up their supporters into this angry frenzy, like it's not even a situation that they necessarily dislike. Like Trump being a lightning, like they actually kind of had it exactly how they wanted it. Trump was a lightning rod for people on their side to get motivated and to really be hate, and this is why they won in 2018 so big. But he's not doing anything that they don't like. He, you know, the immigration policy is actually worse than it was. He's talking about significantly increasing H-1Bs. He did like criminal justice reform. He's talking about letting black people, like literally just let black criminals out of prison. This was why his popularity was plummeting. I mean, when he talks about criminal justice reform, like white people don't want to hear that right now, right? So that's why he's not going to be talking about it for the next couple of weeks. But I don't think that they need to do those. I think the elite has enough control over the system where they don't need to do things like coups and up like unseating a president and things like that.
I think it's quite an interesting prospect as well that you might actually get the Democrats getting into a position where Biden gets elected and potentially at that point, if he did get elected, which I don't think he will, but if he did get elected, could he stand down quite early on and just hand it to Kamala Harris? Because do you actually see Biden as a credible force in politics? Because we've talked a little bit about the positives and negatives of Trump, but very quickly, before we go on to the next super chat, you've got to hand it to Trump. He is very good when it comes to the debate.
Oh, he's very good at what he does. I will give him that credit forever. Yeah.
Do either of you, Jason or Mike, think that Biden would stand a chance in those debates against Trump?
No. The guy is clearly senile. He is way too old for this, and his mind is going, and it's obvious to everyone. But they hated Trump so much, and they thought this was the guy that could beat Trump, so that's why they voted for him. And I expect if he does win, which, again, I'm increasingly thinking he probably won't. Yes, it'll just be President Kamala in a couple of years. My health is bad. I'm just going to step down. Now we have a process in place for this, and now she's the president. And it won't really be any significant difference in how either of them would govern. I mean, they're basically part of the same machine, so it's irrelevant. Biden's a bit of an interesting character because he has such a long history in politics. He's been doing politics for something like 40 years. And so you can really trace with Joe Biden, and Joe Biden is a chameleon. He doesn't care. Like, he has no actual positions. He has no moral, philosophical positions of his own. He literally adapts himself to median voter positions according to focus groups and polling and stuff like that. So you could see where he was in the 80s versus where he is now. And in a way, in the 80s, he was saying harder core things than Donald Trump will say now. I remember he went out there and he said, I don't care about the upbringing of these people. I don't care if they had a tough childhood. All I want is to know my family is safe from criminals. That was a very popular thing to say in the 80s in America. It served him well to say that. Of course, now it's the Republicans that were trying to hang that over his head, saying, oh, look at this racist guy. Because, of course, everyone understands that's a racial statement, which is another funny thing that's an assume, but nobody really calls attention to that fact. Like, when you say that, you're making a racial statement. You are appealing to whites, and you are essentially saying, we know that you don't want to be bothered by black criminals. And that's the funny thing about Biden. But Biden, and now then we have him to this, you know, last year, he's talking about like white privilege theory and he has no spine and no beliefs of his own. He's literally will change to be whatever the focus groups and the consultants tell him to be. So in that respect, and on top of that, now he's just senile. So he just babbles. So it would just be a mess. And that's why they're pretending there's some moral reason not to do a debate, but it's just, he just can't handle it. It would just be a farce. So yeah.
Do you have anything to add to that, Jason, before we move
on? No, I don't think so. I'd like to get to more of these great questions that we have from the community.
Okay, Peps gave £3. Thank you very much, Pep, and said, the fascist disdains the easy life. Giovanni Gentile. Thank you very much. For camaraderie, gave $5. Thank you very much. He said, Mike, do you think Trump is allowing the anarchy and disruption of society in the USA as part of a campaign to bring about government military control over the people, just like a communist society?
No, I think he's allowing it to win the election. Like, seriously, I don't think that that's the risk on the horizon, is the like jackboot SWAT teams marching down. People, funny thing is, you're kind of taught how tyranny works in sort of in school and through media and movies and TV shows. And you're taught tyranny works in a certain way. The government, it tells you to shut up, and it has guys in jackboots, and, you know, watch movies like Brazil and other things like that. So it's maybe this faceless bureaucratic structure that oppresses you and alienates you, or whatever, 1984 type things, or things like that. But that's not how it works today. The government oppresses you by basically completely excluding your perspective from the mainstream, and then telling you that you're insane for having it. They oppress you by enforcing the law in a completely disproportionate way against people like you for being white, and not enforcing it against black and anarchist rioters. I mean, Sam Francis coined the term anarcho-tyranny. I mean, that is much more what the way the government tyrannizes you in America than straight up jackboots in your face. Now, the jackboots in your face may come out depending on what happens, if they feel like they need to. But it's clear that America has kind of learned that that's, you know, and in a way, they learned this from the lesson of communism. Just straight repression engenders just resistance, and people don't like it, and it engenders opposition, and it gives opposition moral high ground. That's the thing. Opposition to communism gives you a moral high ground because it's so awful. So what they want to do is they want to give their opponents moral low ground. They want to make them bigots, racists, evil people that have bad ideas. You want to kill people. You're a terrible person. So they just like blanket that message everywhere. And so they remove, one of the worst things they've done to whites is remove our moral self-confidence. I mean, that's way worse, almost, in a way. I would rather that just we were whites and we were standing up for ourselves, and they were like, oh yeah, we're going to come at you with jackboots for that. Then we're moralized by that. We look good. It makes us that, because, you know, when you're just someone straight up like, I'm oppressing you for your race brutally, but they won't admit to it. They won't admit to it. Instead, they do this campaign of demoralization and moral attacks on us while refusing to discipline people that do attack us. It's a worse, in my opinion, form. They don't even, like, you don't go to jail in America for your political beliefs. If you have the wrong political beliefs, you'll end up going to jail on some tax issue, right? Like, you know, like they'll find some little thing, some infraction you did. Oh, you didn't report this income or something. Oh, well, look at you. You know, so that's just it. They found a very, very underhanded way of robbing the moral high ground from their enemies. It's quite dastardly and insidious, really.
It's psychological warfare, for which we have a psychological defense, and that's why we do the work that we do. And they did at one point, of course, use the jackboots. If we just look back, there are plenty of pictures and videos of the presidents bringing the National Guard of the states out, southern states, against the wills of the governors and mayors in those states, and used that National Guard to put bayonets at the throats of little white students and the white communities who objected to things that the federal government and the anti-white regime behind it wanted to do to our people and in those states. So the federal government will resort, the anti-whites will resort to whatever is necessary to accomplish their anti-white objectives. And when it can be done psychologically, it's easier to do. It's because it's then passed on from generation to generation. Whereas if you have to get the troops in the streets for every reason you just said, it becomes more difficult for them. It's a more sophisticated way of accomplishing the objectives that they have accomplished, tyrants of all times throughout human history. But I'll pass it back so we can keep with these questions.
Thank you. Sam Weller gave $10. Thank you very much. And he said, brief thoughts on events in New Zealand and Victoria. I think he's referring to the lockdowns there, the regional lockdowns. And what I'll say is, this scamdemic is absolutely insane. When you've got cities or entire nations being locked down because of four or five cases of something that's a little worse than the average flu, it shows the kind of panic they are desperate to sort of stir up. And as far as I'm concerned, it's absolutely ridiculous. Empty hospitals, fraudulent mortality rates, criminal levels of under-testing, people living in fear for absolutely nothing. And I see this when I go to the gym. I see this. You see people, you know, wiping down the machines or wiping down the weights with this alcohol gel, as if it's sort of the Black Death 2.0. It's just ludicrous. But we'll move on swiftly because we'll keep it coming with the chats about the National Justice Party. Syrup gave £5. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, join your local pool party. Get rid of your old leftist friends who watch enemy television. Meet fellow nationalists who see as you see. And who know as you know, you'll never have to lie again. That's a very wise words there. Thank you, Syrup. Anglian gave $5. Thank you very much. Any plans for a visit to Britain if we can get you in, Mike?
I would love to do it. I am wary, to say the least, of trying to travel to other countries, frankly, particularly Britain. I feel like if I were to go to Britain, I might have to get in through another way than just landing at Heathrow. I expect I would probably be met at the gate by whatever foreign service agents or whatever you guys have there to say, sorry, we don't want you in our country and we don't have to take you. It's happened to people I know that have committed no crimes. And so, I haven't flown overseas in a couple of years. I actually am wary, frankly. I mean, here, freest country in the world, free country. And I'm just wary of even taking a domestic flight in America. I mean, I don't think it would end with me in jail or something like that, but the levels of crap I would have to put up with to do that makes it like as easier just to drive anywhere, frankly.
Well, I agree with that. I think if we brought you in here, we might have to get you to land somewhere in Eastern Europe, put you in the boot of a car and smuggle you over.
Let's not give details out about how this would work. But yeah.
Mike hidden in the boot of my car.
Well, I could get to Europe if I wanted to. We could leave it at that.
Breathing apparatus on and some kind of periscope we can see out of the boot. What a wacky story that would be. The great thing is, though, once we got you in, we could get you free travel home just by turning you in at the home.
I would just turn myself in and be like, hi, I'm in Britain. Actually, it wouldn't be free. What they do is they book you on the next flight, and whatever that costs, you got to pay it.
I didn't know that.
Because again, I'm not a criminal, right? So it would be like, we just don't want you here, but they would, in fact, you know, they would pay for it. This is what I know from people, because I've known people that have been deported from Britain and Australia, and they've been like deported from Australia. And again, they don't take care about what the ticket price is at the time. They just put you on the next seat. And if that's $3,000, well, you owe the Australian government $3,000. And the United States government will make sure you pay that.
We're not just going to turf you out there.
Yeah. No, it would be funny if that would be how it worked, but it's unfortunately not. They would make me pay. Because it's not like I'm a criminal. It's not like they're arresting me and taking me to a detention facility. They're just saying, go back to America. We don't want you. But, but that's on your dime, buddy. So, yeah, they would absolutely make me pay for that for sure. Still might be, I could maybe get through security faster at least. That might be worth it then.
Yeah, maybe.
I wouldn't have to wait in the security line.
No. Johannes D gave £5 and said, thanks for reading out several of the Locke Boyce quotes. Anglo Scott had made for Mike as a joke. He is now crying into his pastor. Mark and Mike, great show regardless. Oh, thanks for not reading out the several Locke. Yeah, you've sent some quotes and I didn't know whether you were trolling us or whether they were real things.
I can explain it. So there's this character, Locke Boyce, who he's dead now. He died just a couple of weeks ago, alone in his house. He was an enemy of my partner, Alex McNabb, because when Antifa really went after Alex and tried to get his job taken away, he was an EMT. Of course, Alex was an EMT in a small regional rural hospital in Virginia that was starved, frankly, for personnel and resources. But they don't care about that. They care, oh, this guy made a racist joke on the internet. He's unfit to serve black people. Of course, they did a state level investigation and record came up totally clean. In fact, he was one of the best EMTs in the state, as you would expect. And so the guy that was sort of leading this charge then, and then what happened was the town wanted to rehire him to the ambulance company. And the guy that was leading the charge against that was his character, Locke Boyce, who was clearly bucking for some other kind of political accolades because he's a narcissist. Anyway, it was a whole thing. So we had a whole thing making fun of course, he's got videos of himself. There's a video of his brother while drunk trying to wrestle an alligator. We got audio of him claiming he shot gorillas, you know, in the Serengeti plain, and he's just a lunatic. But anyway, so it's funny stuff. But yeah,
well, I am going to read all of their super chats now. It doesn't say, oh, they're all for £3 actually, or some are $3 US. So I'm just going to read them. Johannes D, I'm going to read what was in the Huffington Post, Mike, and I want you to tell me. Is this wrong? Did you say the heat brings out the wild in the Dindu? Did you say that? Your show is called The Daily Shower, a popular neo-Nazi podcast. I can rescue around here for 10 years. Did you say as winter approaches, hey, I've got the floor, buddy. As winter approaches, the animals go into hibernation and the ridiculousness of the 911 calls goes down. Did you say that? Amen. Come on, tell it. That gorilla had a sense of who she was. Tell it, Dr. Boyce. Awesome NJP Mike. You really told it. That is every single one of those wacky.
That seems to be
incomprehensible super chat.
That seems to be a court transcript when Alex went to they had a town meeting and Alex actually took the stand. It's not really a stand. He went up to speak and Locke Boyce was reading stuff like jokes that he had told on the podcast. And so that's, and in the background there was a black preacher doing like, tell it. It was quite the farce. Well, this happened, I guess, over a year ago, maybe even 2 years ago now. But anyway, it was a pretty funny time. Alex basically, and again, here's the thing. Alex went up there. In a way, it was a joke, but there were serious parts of it too. I mean, these people were going after his life, going after his livelihood. He showed up with his wife and his baby. He had supporters there with him, people that did support him in the community and friends of ours. And he wore a suit. He was a serious guy. And he took the stand and he went face to face with Locke Boyce. And he's like, yeah, I said that. What's your problem? And he's like, do you think that's funny? He was like, yes, I think these jokes are funny. And frankly, judging by the fact that everyone back here is laughing or trying to hide their laughter, you know, they seem to think it's funny too. And everyone watching this live stream thinks it's funny. And maybe we stop pretending like this kind of stuff isn't funny. And like somebody making a joke like this doesn't get to have a job, you know? So, you know, this is phony, fake, bogus morality that these people have. It's just sickening.
Well, thank you. I'm still totally
not to
lost,
mention that he's right that essentially when it gets colder, the 911 calls do go down because let me put it this way. There are certain types of people that use the ambulance like a freaking taxi service. And if you are an EMT, and I almost feel like I've heard so many of Alex's EMT stories and I understand what this is about. These people will claim some kind of sickness in order to get just a ride to the hospital to get a pregnancy test. I mean, this happened to him. He had one woman, she was black, that did this several times. She's like, oh yeah, I'm having a heart attack. And the ambulance comes. Like, oh, I'm not actually having a heart attack, but I need to go to the hospital to get a pregnancy test. And then they actually, for various reasons, they have to do it. It's ridiculous. You want to talk about people taking advantage of resources?
That is quite insane. We do have some more super chats. The White Shadow, $3 US, said, philosophically speaking, how is the National Justice Party different from the traditional Workers' Party? Is NJP a NASBOL organization? If not, how would you describe it?
I mean, you know, we're not the same as the traditionalist Workers' Party in a lot of respects. I mean, the traditionalist Workers' Party is defunct. You know, they, I don't even really know what their ideology was. I never really looked into it. We are a nationalist party. We are pro-white. If you want to call it NASBOL, because see, there's a certain element here where if you take positions that are not traditionally located on the economic right, as one of us, as a nationalist, as a racial nationalist, there are certain people that will accuse you of being some kind of, you know, this is where the term NASBOL comes from. Now, initially it was like a joke term and people use it as a joke term. I don't take it seriously. Like, no, we're not a NASBOL organization because that's a joke term. However, we do not take traditionally conservative stances on the economy. We are perfectly fine with the idea of the government providing benefits to the people. So we're not like libertarians or people that want to tear down every government service. No, we do believe that the government has a responsibility to provide services to the people. And so, yeah, some people want to call that, you know, if that, this is actually not an out there opinion. I mean, it's a very standard opinion for nationalists. So, but yeah, our platform is what our platform is. Like that is what we put that out there. There's a document we already put out there. That's our working document, and the full platform is going to be released in November. But I just want to push back on this idea that if I take some economic stances that would be considered traditionally left wing, that there's nothing wrong with this. This is not anti-white. The issue for me is this pro-white? Is this beneficial to the white race? And in fact, many of these free market things are actually not beneficial to us. I mean, certainly that's a discussion people can have. Anybody of any economic ideology is welcome to join our ranks. Well, that's not going to be a breaking point for us, but you know, if the party endorses certain positions and you don't like them, you know, that's fine, but calling names is kind of silly. Yeah.
I'd like to give you an opportunity, Mike, to expand a little bit more on that, because there is the question about, we were earlier in the show talking about, and Mark was suggesting that to win, Trump might say some white positive things to get people to vote for him. We certainly have, and we all have been saying and observing that we have a ground, a soil of our white brothers and sisters that is getting better, as better in the sense of more interested in looking at other messaging, other leadership, other systems of authority. And as a consequence, we're going to have politicians who potentially will begin to appeal to that. They may begin to say something like Mark was saying, where maybe Trump or I'm thinking probably more other levels of the federal government rather than just president, but might say, you know, white people have, they're being attacked, they have interests too. Do you think that these individuals might be reluctant to say such or take such positions, even if they might be beneficial for their campaign, if others speaking to these issues, if others speaking to the harm that's being inflicted on white people are associating and conflating that harm that's being inflicted on white Americans with other ideologies from other periods in history that most Americans find repugnant?
You're talking about like Nazism,
the NASBOL thing.
Well, we are not signaling that way, I don't think. I mean, I think this is a delicate issue. This is where the optics issue comes from. I would say that, however, we have to sort of break a lot. The problem is my view on this is, if you have conditioning in this respect, it tends to actually go hand in hand with anti-white conditioning. Like it seems to be of a package. So when people break that conditioning, it's not like I plan to. No one plans to do things that are like wearing brown shirts or anything like that. That would be, it's not of this era. It would just be silly. And in fact, Hitler himself would probably laugh at you. I mean, he actually in his book made fun of people that did that back then. So I would say, like, no, you have to understand where people are and how to reach them, what their issues are. But I don't think people are, I think that people that raise that issue maybe think that people clutch their pearls about that stuff a little bit more than they do. You know, like, is this really at the top of people's minds? I mean, they call everyone a Nazi too. So when they shoot a Patriot Prayer guy that has a black girlfriend, and that's my understanding is he had a black girlfriend. I could be wrong. I'm just saying, but this is my understanding that this guy, that Danielson, did have a black girlfriend. When he's a Nazi, it just doesn't even matter, right? I mean, if because at that point they consider us all Nazis, right? The enemy certainly considers us that way. So the issue is now not what does the enemy consider us, but how do the people that we want to appeal to consider us? How do they think about us? Mm-hmm. And I think that the presentation that we give is what it is. It's right there. Now, I've read books about that period. I have admiration for figures from that period. I'm not going to lie about that. I'm not going to make it the centerpiece of everything I do. I have an opinion on that period. But again, I think people are so tired of lies that authenticity actually will work, and they seem to think it works too. That's why they shut it down. I mean, if we weren't dangerous, they wouldn't shut us down. And you can actually see the kinds of people that they would like to elevate. And I'll tell you what, it's not me. It's not me. So, yeah, I think that there have been people that go too far in that direction in the past. We're not interested in doing that. I'm not going to change my views on that period or any figures from that period, but we're not going to try and do like a straight imitation. Now, strategically, there's a lot to learn from that period as well, though. You can't not look at Weimar Germany and the strategies of the various political groupings and see lessons for us for today. That would be, I think asking people to not do that would be asking them to throw out a whole bunch of things that could be to their advantage. And so I'm not willing to do that. But no, we're not gonna be like a Nazi LARPing party. I think that's the essential question here. No plans for that.
I think this is a very difficult question, because on one hand, people say, you know, you've got to give up all your ideology if you're going to progress. And people who hold on to any form of ideology, especially anything that could be described as National Socialist, are then attacked and say, you're not going to get anywhere. But equally, you have these parties and groups, and you see them in Britain, and they are full of people who at one time were probably surrounded by people throwing stiff right-armed salutes. They were in parties that were openly racialist. They were in parties that would have called for forced repatriation at one time. And now they're in much more milquetoast parties, and they've sold out on every single thing, and they now disavow anyone that says anything positive about certain regimes or certain leaders. They disavow anyone that talks about repatriation. They disavow people who, in fact, talk about race a lot of the time. But for all of the concessions they've made to liberals, firstly, what concessions have liberals made to them?
Yeah.
And secondly, how much closer are they to power? Well, they might have the odd council seat, which is good, but when there are 20, I think there's 22,000 council seats in Britain, if you've got one of them, you can't really say you're knocking on power for all of the concessions you've made. And one of the problems you see, and you saw this in France, and I'm not going to get into knocking the Front National, and I'm certainly not going to knock Marine Le Pen or any of the people that got her to the final round of the French presidential election. Now, she took 35%, which is absolutely fantastic. Now, I wasn't expecting her to win. And when she got 35%, I remember myself and my dad having a good chat about it. And we said, wow, that was really good. Neither of us were expecting her to win, but we both said if she gets over a third of the vote, that is important progress, because it means a third of the people in France are willing to vote for an anti-immigration pro-white party. And we thought that would please all of her supporters. But her party imploded after that election, because everything that she'd sold out and all the soft support she gained believed that if they didn't win, it was the greatest loss in history, and they had to totally rethink and sell out even more. Which they did. I don't think the Front National exists anymore. It's totally rebranded. It's cut even further. And what will it achieve? Because if in the end you get to the finish line, but you've sold out on everything that you held dear when you started the race, was there even any point in getting to the finish line? And one thing about Patriotic Alternative is we are very, very ideological. We hold on to the things that we believe, but we try to do and say everything in the most polite and best way possible to attract normal people, but without giving up on the things we hold dear. And I do think this constant crowing of Nazi and racist, et cetera, all of the groups that kowtow to that, they don't actually get anywhere for giving up on the things they believe. And that doesn't mean you should go out and put on a uniform and start laughing.
Nobody is ever said to do that. Well,
yeah,
some people have, but nobody right now, and certainly no one I'm involved with. And yes, it's happened before, but those people are a joke, right? They are a joke. And now you here's the thing. I think that it's sort of the trappings versus substance. Like, the substance of National Socialism really was actually taking the message to the people, letting them decide, and having patriots like fight for their country and their race, right? That's what we want. So, of course, we're going to be called Nazis, and people are going to always wonder, oh, are these guys Nazis? And I'm not going to deny that I've read books from that era, and then I admire figures from that era.
I'm getting to books on this show, Mike.
I have opinions on that era, but again, I will take, see, here's the thing. People that come at me with this naysay, I will go with you to a place where normal people gather, and we will see which one of the two of us they like better. No one's taken me up on that challenge yet. Because typically the people that make these kinds of accusations or get nervous about this kind of thing are either not the type of person that's comfortable generally, or they're a certain personality type that is always kind of pecking around the edges. So I would say you have to just honestly not worry about it. We think what we think. We present how we present. It's out there. You saw it. The video's out. I mean, was there something there that was terribly offensive to ordinary Americans? If there was, yeah, frankly, tough. But no, like this is the thing. So I'm not going to disavow anything, but I'm also, there's no reason to just try and do this a costume party. This is serious. We are reaching people today. I guarantee you that I can reach people today if I can get them to listen. If I can get access to ears, people will listen to what I say. I know this. It's worked so far. I'm very good at it. You know, being confident in being good at that is part of what this is about. And so, yeah, I'm not really that worried about it. People will say that forever. I mean, people will say, people that never wanted us to do this will say forever, next thing they're going to do, here come the armbands. But yet, they never materialize, because we're not doing that. We're doing this. We're doing this thing for right now. And, you know, again, anybody that wants to challenge me to the ability to talk to normal people, like, you know, I have people who used to criticize me about how, look, this is all about how this appears to normal people at a church barbecue. I'm like, normal people at the church barbecue friggin' love me. I'll tell you that much. I'll go to the church barbecue. I'll make 10, 20 new friends, guaranteed. So there that is.
Good points. 156 viewer gave £3 and said, good show as usual. Thank you very much. The White Shadow gave $3. Thank you very much. And said, Philip, oh, we've already done that one. That's the Nazbol one. Message in a Bottle gave $10 and said, a small token of my appreciation for all the work you put in towards our people's sovereignty. Take care, everyone. Well, thank you very much. Very good of you. Mark Hooper gave £25. Thank you very much, my friend. Great to hear from you again, and some great news for you today. That has really raised my spirits. He said, can't think of a good question, so I'll just leave this here. Great show. Well, thank you very much, Mark. Looking forward to seeing you again soon. Alex May gave £25. Thank you very much, and said, Mike, good luck with the new National Justice Party. And Mark, here's hoping Patriotic Alternative will get approved as a political party soon. Our country really needs it. Thank you. Junta Mominari gave another $5. Thank you very much. Corporations love to finance diversity and anti-racist programs because it equals big profits. Jeff Bezos is a goy billionaire that is heavily interested in it. Any right-wing movement or leader that doesn't want to crush woke capital is dead on arrival. Yes, I agree. And
yeah, exactly.
Itero gave $3 and says, thank you very much. He said, it's kind of scary when I think back to my childhood in Norway and how it has turned out today. Unlike America, there is very little protest going around and people are very isolated in their own bubble. Well, thank you very much. And we do have some questions. Beer Hall Pooch says, Mike, please remind Stryker that he confirmed to me months ago he'd come on this show. So Yes, there is an invitation for Eric Stryker to come on this show if he wants to. That's very important. Let him know, yes. Brit Nat Adams said, thoughts on the Banksy boat, especially on it breaking down in Tunisian waters. Also, if we still had treason laws, should Banksy be convicted of treason? I think he should. Well, it's a shame that Banksy wasn't on the boat. And yes, when it arrived back in port, it should have been turned back with him on it. And he could have just sailed round in the Mediterranean and not returned to do any more of his rubbish art. The Thin Red Line gave another $3. Thank you very much. And he said, in line with my former question, do you think the results of the election could be contested and thus producing a constitutional crisis?
I think that's possible. I mean, I expect that they're gearing up for something extremely fake and gay with this election. I all the signs are there. Like the mail stuff, because apparently the mail system. Here's the thing, the breakdown of the postal service is a bit of a symptom of our collapsing society. You know, the idea of the postal service was, I don't have to give you, everyone knows the idea, but it is breaking down and it is actually being sabotaged, and people like Jeff Bezos, they don't care about the post office. They want to have like some Indian immigrant in like an Uber delivering packages for you on like a gig economy basis, not like a postal worker that has good benefits, good salary, gets some nice extras. I mean, dude, do you know how great it would be to be like a letter carrier as your job? You get to walk around town, you know, listen to what you want, listen to some music, listen to some podcasts. Get some fresh air, get some exercise, and just drop letters in people's mailbox. It'd be a great job. And you get good benefits, and you get a pension and everything. They want to destroy that system so bad. They want to make the post office like Indians in rickshaws on gig economy salary. You know, that's what they're trying to do. And so, you know, and speaking of the Indian issue, this is why I say when you don't come out forthrightly for white people, you get problems, because the China stuff is very fake, but there is a problem with China. And the problem is that we have moved our manufacturing base to China. However, when you complain about that and you don't forthrightly demand jobs back to America for white workers, what do you get? Oh, well, we're getting out of China because, you know, they started COVID-19 or whatever. But, oh, yeah, all that stuff is moving to India, and it's all moving on the federal government's dime. So, actually, wow, you don't benefit at all. Thank you. So when you don't stand up for what you – when you try to get to something – because I've heard people that have said this to me. Let's attack China on the COVID issue, even though it's pretty fake, because this way maybe we get manufacturing back. And it's like, oh, but look, what happened? You just get manufacturing in a different third world country. So that's not what we want, but yeah, that's wow. What was I even talking about? Oh, the election. I think that there's going to be some phony stagecraft here involving post office and mail-in ballots and contested stuff, and it's going to either that or it's such a landslide in one way or the other that's pointless to do that. But yeah, that could happen. That could very well happen, and that will of course further engender hatred between these two sides of this political spectrum in America.
Yeah, I think that's a very good answer. I just want to go back to the, when we were talking about optics and what you should say and what you shouldn't say, I do agree about not being a LARPy party. But at some point, and I get this all the time, people say, Mark, what happens if you were ever to go on a talk show and people were to throw your past at you, or people were to throw...
Well, they would. I mean, that would be inevitable. Yeah, so, yeah.
Of course it would. Of course it would. Yeah. But at some point, I might be totally wrong here. So, the audience is there. I can see the chat now. I can see what people are saying on Entropy. But at some point, somebody's got to just stand there and say, so what?
Yeah.
So what? Now, a while ago, two decades ago, I made some comments. I said that I would, if I had children, I would rather they grew up in 1930s Germany than Oldham or Burnley today. Now, that caused controversy, and people were saying to me, to this day, people say, oh, you'll never get anywhere because you've made comments like that. Comments like that are so absolutely toxic to the British public that because you've said something that was supportive of that regime, you can never, ever achieve anything in your life now. But I've got to ask anybody the question now in the chat. Is there anybody in the chat today, now, watching this show, who would rather their child grow up in a place like Oldham or a place like Rotherham or a place like Telford where white girls are being raped and young white men are being stabbed and abused and street signs are in Urdu and it's basically a place where you're a minority? Or would you rather your kid live in 1930s Germany? Do you want your kids growing up in somewhere like that? And what I was trying to say then is what I'm saying now and what I've always said, that the issue here is that we're told to hate anything that was pro-white. We're told to hate anything where people or any place or any regime that advocates for the good of Europeans, whether it be modern, whether it be historic, it doesn't matter. And we're told to accept regimes that hate us, that place us in a position where we're a hated minority. And if people want me to apologize for saying that I'd rather my little girl grew up in an environment where she was safe, where she wasn't prey for an aggressive group of migrants, I'm not apologizing for
that. Not even just that, but where the state is dedicated to her well-being and her thriving.
Exactly.
Right. So here's the thing. So why is this the tripwire that we are given? The tripwire that we are given is this because this is a state that took care of itself as a race and nation, and this is not something that they want anybody doing. So the idea they would actually – you are supposed to pretend that you would prefer a shithole – excuse me – a shithole to a actual country where your race – and your nation are promoted and cherished, and the government is dedicated to your thriving and expanding as a people. That is not something. I mean, why would it? Does you don't have to go into the specifics. Just think about the general idea behind it. So, no, I'm not gonna. I would totally agree with you 100%, Mark. At some point, you have to just tell people, no, look, your shibboleths are part of what's crippling us. So, if we kowtow to that, we're never gonna break out of this problem.
They want us to be saying sorry forever. They want us to be saying sorry for, and sooner or later, if you said, oh, well, I don't mean any of that. I didn't, I was such a big
you
mistake.
Just look weak. You're then you're not popular with anybody.
No. And what's more, even if you said now that you wanted to go back to 1930s Britain, they would hiss and spit at you just as much. But right. The fact of the matter is, whether anyone wants to accept this or not is up to them. World War II was a disaster for Europe, for Britain, and the white race. Not only did the British people lose some 500,000, the vast majority of which were the most incredible, patriotic, virile, upstanding men, but we lost our empire and the destruction and the vacuum left by that war directly led to wave after wave of mass immigration, which has now destroyed this country. And if people don't want to accept that, if people don't want to start from that position, if people want to kind of try to make some, oh, well, that was all based and we, you know, we have to support this kind of liberal capitalism because that's what modern Britain is. But we just want liberal capitalism with a few less of these people. That has never worked and it never will work. And the fact of the matter is, after doing this for 20 years, I'm not going to start apologizing. The fact is, we have a 20-point plan on our website. Read that 20-point plan, and if people disagree with it, they can go and make their way somewhere else in life. That is a sensible plan that that is for the good of our people. And they're going to have to make a choice now. You either join groups like Patriotic Alternative or the National Justice Party, and you do the best for your own people, or you go out there and you perish trying to make your way pleasing those who hate you. It is a simple equation. And I would rather stand by my morals and die with my head held high than crawl around on my knees begging for acceptance from those who already despise me and want me, my family, and my daughter dead. And I will make no apologies for taking that stance. And I am so pleased to be sat here with you guys tonight, because I know you're exactly the same. And that's why I think the National Justice Party is a fantastic development for America.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. Like, basically, if you know that this is a tripwire, don't trip over it. Like, again, why this is something they built this in. But the thing is, if we have to forever be held hostage to this shibboleth, then we just can't get anywhere. So the person that breaks through it kind of has to be someone that says, yeah, I don't apologize for these positions. I don't see the people that advocate for that basically know everything we know and agree with the things that we agree with, and yet advocate for some kind of hiding what you think or not telling people who you are, not telling people what you're about. Like, we tell people what we're about. If somebody asks me my opinion on World War II, I will tell you my opinion. I am in agreement with Mark. I think the victors in that war are the people that are oppressing us today. That's a fact. It's a fact. I have other opinions as well. I mean, we could, but the issue is that if they are going, if that's something, it's essentially like, oh, you need to, oh, you, it's basically setting you up to always fail, basically, is what these kinds of issues are doing. And the reason that the programming exists is so that you fail. But again, when we put out our party platform, which we are going to be announcing, we are still wrangling over various points of it. When we put that out, that's what we're about. You can agree with it or not. If you say, well, that's something that they said, that's something the Nazis did. So what? Is it a sensible policy or not? I mean, frankly, there's every government has a policy that the Nazis did. So we could even just level that at anybody. But the issue is they're not called to account for it if they are, on board with neoliberal Zionist capitalism. So the issue here is when we put out what our party's about, when you see what we look like, when you see our presentation and what we're putting out there, that's who we are. We're not lying about who we are. I have never lied about who I am. I have never lied about what I think. I don't. And if I started now, it would be pointless anyway, because there's thousands of hours of recordings of me. So, like, what would be the point? So, yeah, I just think that this is something. And I understand. I just want to, in for some bit of, I understand why people say this. Because the brainwashing and the psychological warfare is so intense that it feels like, you know, there is this massive thing. But the thing is, Antifa are shooting people in the street right now. And this and they are saying they're going to do it more. Apparently, they're hiding this guy. They haven't been able to find him. They are burning down cities. White people are being attacked on a racial basis. Remember, here's my thing with Patriot Prayer and Proud Boys and all them. They are attacked on a racial basis. They are always called Nazis, white supremacists, white nationalists. They deny this up and down. And in their case, it's actually true. But that doesn't change the fact that when Antifa, when anarchists go out and attack people, it's racial. They see themselves as fighting white supremacy. They see themselves as fighting Nazism. They see themselves as fighting these things. They see themselves racially aligned against white people. So if you're not going to defend on that basis, and if you don't want to do it because, well, oh, that's something Nazis did too, and everyone hates Nazis, just taking that assumption as it is. I mean, if you really think everyone hates them so much, go to a gun show sometime and look at the kind of paraphernalia they sell. I'm just, I'm just telling you that. But, like, okay, you know, there's that. Oh, I just like the design. It's just the design aesthetics. It's just really good design. You know, so.
On that bombshell, we have reached the end of our show. We've just had a generous super chat from DL. We can't actually answer this now because we are about to run over. Thank you for the $25. If you don't mind, I will ask this particular question on next week's show, if that's okay, DL. But thank you for the super chat. Mike, give us a very brief outro. Please tell us how we can find the NJP and how we can contribute to your work and how people can get involved.
JusticeParty.com. If you want to get our newsletter, we're sending out an email newsletter. You can sign up for that at nationaljusticeparty.com, the contact us page there on the homepage. You can read our party statements. We put out some political statements. You can see the video of my speech there. Of course, you can also see my other work on the rightstuff.biz and Eric Stryker's other work at national-justice, which was his website name, was the inspiration for the party name, but it is not actually an official party organ. The official party organ is nationaljusticeparty.com. Send us your email. You know, we have a filtration system in place. So if you're going to try and we're going to know if you're not genuine, just I'll leave it at that. And you probably won't hear from us again if you're just spamming and doing crap. But we have a newsletter that's going to go out, and people that want to attend our meetings and things like that, we will be in contact with you through those channels on that. We're not going to be announcing that kind of thing, you know, on live streams and things like that for obvious reasons. But yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Mike. It's been absolutely fantastic. And just before we go over to Jason, I've just got to say, Laura Towler is about to go live on YouTube. The link is in the chat. It's also up on my Telegram. She is on the following channel, The Galileo Show. Laura and No Chance are the guests, and that is going live now at 9 p.m. So hop on over there for more excellent nationalist content. Jason, please give us your outro, my friend.
Well, it was great to be here with both of you and all of this magnificent community. Looking forward to the good things that Mike and friends and company are going to be doing. I was glad to hear that Mike was stated that you all are going to be taking care of, not putting our young men into any unnecessarily dangerous situations. So I appreciate that, since we've had that happen far too often and ended up in imprisonments and even suicide. In other groups. So I'm glad to hear that. We don't have the tap ironed out just yet. Of course, it's going to be on No White Guilt channel and all of the other platforms that we are on, but it'll be in the next couple of days. And it'll either be the great Jared George and myself alone, or perhaps we'll have a guest. The one thing I will just add as a question for you all and everybody who's listening to think about in the days to come, weeks to come, is just this, and this was to the conversation. I know we're out of time, but I just wanted to leave the question, and that is it necessary to conflate concern for our people with the Nazi party and Nazi positions because anti-whites will call us Nazis? Do we have to rehabilitate the Nazi party and Nazi positions because the anti-whites will call us Nazis? So that's just a question I'll leave there for folks to think about, and I'll pass it back and look forward to the exciting things to come from Mike and company and Mark next week.
Well, thank you very much. I am also live on Friday with Andy Worski. So that will be on D Live. I'll be sharing the link to that. That's something to look forward to. And don't forget, Laura is live now over on the Galileo Show. We had over 2,500 people watching tonight. Another fantastic show. Thank you so much to Mike. It's always incredible to have you here. Thank you so much to Jason. It's always amazing to work with you. Thank you to everyone who donated so generously this evening. And as always, the biggest thank you is to our amazing audience. It's been one hell of a show. Thank you so much, and we will see you same time next week for another episode of PWR with the guest All Well and Good. Now, go and watch Laura Towler. She's doing great work over on Galileo. Enjoy the show and have a great weekend. I'll see you all again soon. Good night.